Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.
Ja hörni, då är det lördag. Man är alltid nyfiken på någon. Och nu är jag nyfiken på en gammal kär vän, my favorite Welshman, John Rhys Davies. Welcome back.
How wonderful to be back.
Ammanford, 30 kilometers north of Swansea. Is that where you grew up?
That's where my folks came from.
Okay.
And they had been roughly in that area for about 400 years.
Okay.
They didn't travel far. My mother's father was a miner, and he died in a pit accident a year before I was born.
Coal mine?
Coal mine, yes. My father's family were farmers, and my mother didn't much think of the prospects of Wales, because as a child she'd grown up remembering the 1919 miners' strike, the 1921 miners' strike, the 1926 general strike. And she felt that there were more prospects to be had in England, and my father became an engineer in England. And then after that, when I was born in 44, in 47, when all the people came back from the war, he felt uncomfortable because he had not served in the war. He was, engineers were restricted in occupations. And he went out to Africa, and so we followed him out there. And I spent really the interesting part of my childhood, the bits that I remember, in Africa, in Tanganyika.
In Tanzania?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And, but Wales, what's your relation to Wales today? Is there any part of you that's...
Well, my parents are buried there,
yeah.
And I was sent to England to a boarding school, so there was a month at Easter and a month at Christmas when my parents were out in Africa that I couldn't get to them, and those were the months that I spent for nearly 8 years, 9 years in Wales with my grandmother and Auntie Maggie, and so there was very much... Part of my childhood was Wales, going to church, going to the chapel three times on Sunday, no playing cards, because cards are the devil's tools.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a wonderful schizophrenic childhood because, 4 acres and 5 servants out in Africa, and then Welsh mining cottages, 2 up-down, a tin bath in front of the fire on Friday night.
Contrasts.
Yeah. And of course, children always try to blend in. So I developed the Welsh accent as well, so that I can... I don't really speak Welsh. I understand more than I thought I did, but that need to accommodate the a different environment. You learn to speak English in England. You learn to suggest your Welshness in Wales, and in colonial Africa, you are.
So you're a dialect chameleon.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, and but wonderful experience, wonderful.
When you're not acting, Isle of Man is your home base, and part of it in New Zealand.
I have a wife and a daughter in New Zealand. I have a monstrous daughter in New Zealand. She is 16 and a half. She is one of the smartest women I've ever met. But she's wonderful. I said, darling, you're going to have to come to Brazil and act as my assistant. Last September, October, and she said, yes, I'd like to do that. And so she came, and I said to her afterwards, what did you learn from the experience? And she said, I was surprised to find how many people like you. I said, well, thank you very much. And I said, what else? And she said, well, when you introduced me to Chris Pine, she said, first of all, I was astonished how tall Chris Pine is. Secondly, how handsome Chris Pine is. I dropped off to sleep then, I think. But I think I came back at about 8 or 9, and it was still extolling the virtues of Chris Pyle, who, may I say, I love and adore, and he's as wonderful a man as he is compelling an actor. And I do hope that we'll be able to do Princess Diaries 3 if they get round to making it, and if the cast is still the same.
What was your first acting job, paying acting job, John?
I was at university, as my daughter tells the story. She said, I'm going to study law at Cambridge, Daddy. And I said, why law? And she said, because I want to be rich. And she said, and I said, why Cambridge? She said, because I heard in an interview that you failed to get into Cambridge because you were drunk at the interview. I said, thank you very much. I went to the University of East Anglia. I was a founder student. There were 105 of us in the university, including postgrads. So I founded the Dramatic Society, and then I did work at the... Once you found the society, you can steal all the good parts. And then I worked locally. But Anglia Television asked me to do something for a tiny little bit of television in 1965, I think, 1966. I was terrible. But it was just a little piece that they were doing on the man who was the basis for Falstaff, Shakespeare's Falstaff, a man called Sir John Oldcastle, who was a great Norfolk knight. And Shakespeare really had to apologize for using Oldcastle's name, and I think Falstaff becomes a revision of a revised name rather than Oldcastle.
So that was your first?
That was my first, yes.
Going through the motions, going through the years, the first time I saw you on TV, it was not Ivanhoe, it was I, Claudius. 1976, with Derek Jacobi.
Yes, and what a cast. What a brilliant cast. And my old friend Brian Blessed as Augustus. Brian has... I love Brian, and I think he is one of the most neglected character actors of his generation because he has a huge, robust personality, and directors want him to do the big, full, over-the-top thing. Herbie Wise, who directed I, Claudius, said... just kept saying, just diminishing his fingers, saying, Brian, smaller, smaller. Just show me the eyes. And it's a wonderful performance of this agreeable man listening to what you have to say. And the eyes are saying, I'm going to have to kill you, aren't I?
Yeah.
And Jacobi, wonderful. I mean, the whole cast was so good. And wonderful Sean Phillips. I worked with Sean. We did a remake of Under Milk Wood for the BBC, I think, with every Welshman who could walk and talk in it. And that was... we did that a couple of years ago. But great stuff. I mean, and I'd worked with John Hurt, who played Caligula.
Yeah.
We had done The Naked Civil Servant together, literally about 3 months before that. That was a wonderful thing. The Naked Civil Servant is about is a real-life story about an effeminate homosexual called Quentin Crisp, who really was a cross-dressing homosexual trailblazer in the 30s. And a sort of legend in the gay community. The legend and the reality weren't quite the same. I went to have tea with him because I was playing one of his erstwhile lovers, and there was in his book he said, you know, he never bothered to dust his apartment because after 3 years, the dust doesn't get any thicker, you know. actually, the apartment was pretty disgusting with these sort of this unmade bed that didn't look awfully clean. And his cups, he had, you know, drinking tea out of these cracked, chipped cups and trying to find, you know, a place where, you know, where you can politely sip without sort of cutting your lips or anything like that. But he was a brave man, and it was a great story. But working with John Hurt was just fabulous. It was at the time when John Hurt got banned in South Africa, because basically the South Africans had confused him with John Hurd.
out of all the television, of the stage, and all the movies you've been doing over the years, when were you starstruck? Is there one moment where you said, this is surreal?
I think it was when I did Shogun with Richard Chamberlain, which was a big miniseries, like huge. I mean, the biggest miniseries of
early
its time.
80s.
Actually, it started miniseries, really, apart from Roots, I suppose. And I loved Richard, and he was such a professional, and I'd learned so much from him. And then after that, I was invited to do Victor Victoria, directed by the great Blake Edwards, Julie Andrews, James Garner, just a host of really accomplished people. And I looked around this group of people and thought, well, this is the challenge, isn't it? If you can hold your own in this company, you might have a chance. And that was the introduction, I think. That was the point at which I thought, yeah, I actually can do this. And one day, Blake came to me and he said, "I've just had a phone call from Steven Spielberg, who's doing a thing, and he's wondering whether you can what sort of person you were." And I said, "He's a complete arsehole, probably kicks dogs and beats small children." And I said, "That's fair enough." I mean, anyway, then I got Raiders of the Lost Ark as a result of that. It was luck. And to all of you would-be actors listening, let me emphasize that luck will play a bigger part in your career than in any other career you could choose. If you come and work for a great radio station like this one, they'll start you off in the mailroom delivering stuff, and you'll slowly work your way up. There's no reason why you should not eventually end up running the radio station, if that's the way you want to do it. With acting, there is no reason why the phone will ever go again. One of these days, the phone will stop ringing for me. John Rhys-Davies won't know, but his career is over. And it is all about luck. It is all about those serendipitous moments when somebody switches on a television set and takes off their earrings and sees you in a tiny little thing and calls your agent up next day and says, "I've got an American TV show that I want to do, and I've never met this actor. Who is he? He looks very interesting." And it was a woman called Maud Spector who cast me in Shogun, from which I got an Emmy nomination.
Wow.
It's
all about luck.
It's not all.
But you've got part of it.
You've got
your talent.
You've got to have talent, and you've got to work at it, and you've got to be able to seize the opportunity when it happens. But for some actors, it never happens. You can be, of all the wonderful actors I was with, at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, there was one who is still working, but he's never had the television series or the big break. And he was every bit as good as any of us. And he's still working, but he's still a small part player, and it never, the opportunity never came.
Such is life.
Yeah.
From early 80s, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Some years later, mainly 2023, Salah's grown quite older, and you return to the Indiana Jones story.
Well, that's true, but unfortunately I can't talk about it because Disney are very concerned that nothing gets said without their approval.
Okay.
But I wasn't even allowed to confirm that I was in it. But since the trailers have gone out and I'm clearly in it, I guess it's a bit absurd saying that. What I can say is it's a great script. It is directed by a great director. The only man whose film I have watched three times the last year was Ford versus Ferrari, directed by James Mangold. And of course, it stars Harrison, who is, you know, arguably one of the greater film stars of his generation. I mean, it would be Denzel. Denzel Washington, still the handsomest man in Hollywood. I would rate Denzel. There were probably half a dozen or people that you would put in that top thing, and certainly Harrison is one of them. And an iconic part as well. The supporting cast is marvelous.
No George Lucas, no Steven Spielberg. They left the building for this one.
They did. Though they are, I think they have producer credits or something like that. But it's a Disney thing, and working for Disney is an interesting experience.
But wasn't it surreal to going back into the role that you started basically more than 40 years ago as Salah?
No, it was not difficult. There are characters that you fall in love with. I love Salah, and I love Gimli. And they are sort of parts of our sensibility that they just stick. They're just little extensions of the possible John Rhys Davises. I mean, that's really acting, isn't it? I mean, acting gives you the opportunity to explore those parts of your soul and nature that real life never should. John Rhys Davis, the murderer, the killer, the violent man. They're all there on the camera, but fortunately, they're not there as my regular practice.
Malmö this weekend, the sci-fi world at the Slakthuset in Malmö. You tour when you're not making movies and television and voice acting. You go to all these fan conventions. What's so special about them?
I realize now from my older age that when I was a young man, I didn't really like people. And now that I'm an older man, increasingly, I find myself loving people. And I really put it down to going to fan conventions. The first fan convention I went to, I think it was 98 or something like that, it was part of, it may have been a little bit before that, part of promoting a show. And I remember thinking, oh, God, what do I have to do? Go to this 24, all these people who haven't got us, can't they get a life? I'm wandering around dressed as Captain Kirk and things like that. I mean, and I went with my usual skepticism And very slowly it dawned on me that actually they do have a life. And then as I started to listen more, I discovered so many of those lives were so rich and wonderful and heroic. I have met some of the finest people that you can meet there. Brave mothers and fathers, people struggling with real difficulties and handicaps in life and are still brave and going on. I've met about 300 archaeologists who've come up to me and said, you know, the reason I got into archaeology was watching Raiders of the Lost Ark. Of course, we don't do it that way these days.
No. Actually, I started studying archaeology at university for one semester because of Raiders of the Lost Ark, till I found out that all the people that were graduating the year I started, they were unemployed basically half the year, and then they're just like going to diggings and stuff, and then being unemployed for some months.
Well, you know, I love history and science very much, and I've written a script about our ancestor, a common ancestor that we have. And I'm trying to open a little film studio in the Isle of Man. It's a sound stage, and I'm hoping that will be open in the next month and a half, 2 months. And then I have to go out and shake the money tree to get the funding and financing for the films that I want to make. And they will celebrate humanity. They should make you feel proud of being human, proud of being the descendants of brave people. There's some comedies there, and there are one or two serious pieces about love and death and heroism, and that's really the next bit of my story, I think. It better be, because I'm getting up there, and I'm incapable of a short soundbite answer, aren't I?
Yeah.
The answer to your question is, what do I get out of fan conventions? I meet people who I come to love and respect. As an actor, another note for you would-be actors, love your audience. Care for your audience. Give your audience the full value for their money when they come to see you in the theater or the box office or anything like that. If you look after your audience, one day your audience will look after you. If I ever hear of you having contempt for your audience, I will personally seek you out and beat you. Love your audience. Remember that great adage, I think it's Dr. Johnson. The drama's laws, the drama's patrons give. And we who live to please must please to live. Engrave that on a plaque and put it on the wall opposite your bed so that every morning when you wake up, you can see that. It is the audience that we look after, and you must look after them. And the only way you can really do that is actually meeting them and talking to them and listening to them. Very hard for us actors to listen.
John Rhys-Davies, it's been fabulous having you here. Third time around, fourth time around, maybe, somewhere in the future.
Inshallah, as the Arabs would say. God willing.
Yeah, inshallah. God willing. Inshallah. Yes. Inshallah. Lördagsgästen på Retro FM.